Scripture reading this evening is from Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. Daniel chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles of the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia, and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Aspenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude in every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned to them daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave to them new names: Daniel, the name Belshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and Azariah, Abednego.
Good evening. Life is challenging sometimes, and I think that the verses we just read there capture that. Can you imagine being those four guys, Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, and here you are really at a successful time in your life? It talks about how these guys were smart, intelligent, young guys who just... they had their life before them, and then in comes this enemy king, and he sweeps them away, takes them miles and miles and miles away from their homeland, and plants them here in this foreign land. It's all of this sin and evil and all of this idolatry, and there they live among people who don't speak their language. They live among people who have a completely different culture than them, and there they take up a whole new life serving a foreign enemy king. That would be tough. I want to talk tonight about challenges, about dealing with difficulties in our lives, because all of us face challenges sometimes. Some part times of our lives, they're not that great. And other times they're huge. Sometimes they're small and they're just kind of day by day things. And other times there's just one big one that slams us. But we all deal with challenges. And so I want to talk about how we deal with those. And this evening's lesson is titled, God Can Handle That. And we're going to do this lesson from Daniel chapter 3, because this is a chapter that really clearly shows that God can handle even the biggest challenges. And it shows us how to let God handle even the biggest challenges. And with that, when you think about these guys, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and hear them being way off in this foreign land and dealing with all of these difficulties, the book opens with challenges, but by the time you get to chapter 3, those challenges are so much bigger. And you get to chapter 3, here King Nebuchadnezzar has built this huge, tall statue, and now he's ordering everybody everywhere to bow down and worship this statue or be thrown in the fiery furnace. And so I want to start by reading the first section of that chapter, and as we read it, I want you to try to visualize the pressure that would have been on these guys, the pressure that they would have been feeling under these circumstances. It's unimaginable, the pressure that they would have been feeling. But let's think about that as we read through this, starting in verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent together the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, and the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, wire, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. Therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up." All right, let's talk about the tremendous pressure that would have been on these guys. Did you notice the almost rhythmic quality of this chapter? The way that there's these lists that are repeated over and over, these phrases and words that just keep coming back, and you have this whole big, long, long list, and you read the whole list, and you get to the next verse, and you've got that big, long list all over again, and you read it again. There's something going on here in this chapter. It's as though all of these words are just building and building and building this enormous pressure as the word after word describes all of the things pushing against these guys. There's several things here. First of all, we notice that everyone seems to be doing it. And I mean everybody here. Here it's described as it goes through, and in verse 2 it lists all these people. It talks about the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces. And then you get to verse 3, and you get that whole list all over again. All these same exact guys, same order, everything. List them all again. What's going on here? Why do we have all this repetition? And it's to show us all these people, everybody, anybody, is right there, right now, worshiping this big hunk of metal. This everybody, and we're talking about the most prominent people, the prefects and the governors and all these big name people. They're all doing it. They're all here worshiping this thing. And not only that, not only is it all the people who seem to be the most prominent, but it seems to be all the people everywhere. And you see that as in verse 4 when it says, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages." Peoples, nations, languages, everybody. We're talking all of the peoples, all of the nations, all of the languages, everybody bow down to this statue. And then, when you get to verse 7, here's what happens. It says, "Therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up." See the word pictures that are going on here? I don't think literally every single person in the whole entire globe was right now at the spot on the earth worshiping the statue. But that's what it felt like. It felt like every nation in the world, every people in the world, every language in the world was right here, right now, with their face on the ground to this big piece of metal. Talk about peer pressure. If you're standing there, and everybody else has their face to the ground, everybody else in the whole entire world has their face to the ground, and you're the only guy standing up, I think you feel a little bit awkward at that point. There's some peer pressure there. But then not only do you have that kind of pressure, you also have the noise. And this chapter captures the noise. You have this, again, rhythmic quality as the words are heaped upon words to describe all the noise and noise and noise, as it talks about in verse 4, like we just read, where it says that in verse 5, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all these instruments, and these instruments are repeated over and over again throughout the chapter, again in the same order, same instruments, and you can just hear all of these different instruments playing this big sound of everybody come worship this idol. It's as though the whole earth is playing Satan's great symphony. That's the way it feels. That all of this noise and noise and noise is just pushing everybody in the world towards this one piece of evil. But then not only that, you also have, I feel like they're the only ones left. You have this, in the midst of all of these people, you have the few. And you see that here as all this builds and builds and builds and builds. And then all of a sudden, when you get to verse 8, it's like everything stops. It's like we have everybody's doing it, and then everything stops because we see, wait, there's three guys that aren't doing it. And you see that, read with me in verse 8. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Now here are the Jews, the once great Jewish nation that's now been taken captive, and it's only this small, little, tiny remnant off here in the Babylonian Empire. But we don't even have that whole remnant here. We've got three guys. And it feels like three guys against the whole entire world. It feels like everybody else is doing it, and yet we've only got three of God's people left. And those three little guys are having to stand up against all of this pressure. But then, not only do we have that discouragement, but then we have the most obvious pressure of all. The horrific and blazing consequences. This fiery furnace. And what happens as you read through this chapter is, as hot as that furnace is, the more they resist it, the hotter it gets. Whenever they say no, Nebuchadnezzar just cranks it even hotter. The more they try to push back against it, the more the flames leap. It's like whenever they're trying to resist the temptation, Satan just turns up the heat even more. He says, I can make it even worse. I can bring worse on you. Just watch this. That's pressure. That's difficult. So let's talk about us today, and let's see how all this compares to us and where we are. We face a lot of pressures in our lives today. And we may not be standing next to a fiery furnace, but we face the similar kinds of things. We deal with people. We may not be standing next to some giant statue made out of metal with everybody bowing down to it. But we face these similar kinds of things. There are these times where it feels like everybody around us is doing the wrong thing. Where we're trying to live our Christian lives and everybody else is going the other way. Where we're walking this way and they're all walking that way. And that makes it difficult when everybody's going the opposite direction. That makes it challenging. When you go to work and you work with a bunch of people who worship their paychecks, it can be hard to be different. When you have friends who worship their entertainment, it can be hard to be different. when you have neighbors who worship themselves, it can be hard to be different. Or whatever, whoever you might be around, it's difficult when it feels like everybody's kind of like that over there, but I'm having to be this, and that I don't fit in anymore. That's challenging. But then not only that, there's the noise. There's all the constant bombardment of that noise all around us of sin. Be it on the television, or on in movies, or in music, or on Facebook, or on the website, or wherever that bombardment might be, Satan just keeps sending it in, and it's like it just never stops. It's like the whole earth is playing Satan's symphony, and he's got the volume turned up way too loud. That's how it feels with the way we're just constantly pelted with those kinds of temptations. And sometimes it's not so much just that it's such a bad temptation. It's that we deal with things that tend to go over and over and over and over. Things like the constant irritations that we deal with during the day that push us and push us and push us until we lose our temper, or we say the thing we shouldn't have said, or we react the way we shouldn't have. And it wasn't just that something was so great that it pushed us over the edge. It's just that our day was frustrating from beginning to end, and that kind of just pushed us the wrong direction. But then there's also the consequences, where so many of our decisions in our life, Satan has a way of making it where the decision to do the right thing leads to something that is much more miserable than the decision to do the wrong thing. Where if I just did the wrong thing, that would be a whole lot easier. But if I do the right thing, then I'm going to have to deal with the challenges at my work and how my boss isn't going to be very happy, or I'm going to have to deal with friends and relationships that aren't the way that should be, or extended family that doesn't like me anymore, or whatever the challenge and consequence is going to be. Satan has a way of turning up that heat and making us see all those flames leaping over there. And we start to think, that road doesn't look very appealing anymore. Satan has a way of doing that. Satan's powerful. He holds a lot of challenges in front of him. Question is, how do we deal with all of these difficulties? Well, let's continue through the story. As we go through this, as we deal with these challenges, we tend to feel like after a while Satan's gotten things worse and worse and worse on us, we get to a point where we just feel like, I can't do it anymore. And we just start to throw up our hands and feel like, I quit, I just can't handle this. And chances are, that's right. Chances are, I can't handle it. And chances are, that's exactly the same thing for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they couldn't handle it. But God could handle it. And God did handle it. And God was with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, even when it meant being right there in the flames with them. And so let's see how that works out. Because throughout all of this, God is more powerful. Read the text with me. Let's read verse 13 now. We're going to read a lengthy section here and see how this story unfolds. Verse 13. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?" That's the key phrase right there. who is the God that will deliver you out of my hands? Nebuchadnezzar stands up and says, look, I'm so powerful. You think there's even a God that could rescue you from me? Now continue reading and let's see. I mean, this is all a huge, huge just threat against God. This huge challenge against God. Verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression of his face was changed because of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated seven times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of his mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning fiery furnace because the king's order was urgent, and the furnace overheated. And the flame of the fire killed these men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning fiery furnace. You see how it's all about this challenge is more powerful than God. That's the way Satan likes to frame it. Where this challenge is so big, you better pay attention to this challenge. Don't keep looking up at God. Look at this challenge, because this is the real threat. This is what's going to kill you. Look at this one. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't look at the challenge. They looked up at God. And let's keep reading the story. Let's see how it unfolds. Verse 24. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose up in haste. He declared to all his counselors, did we not cast three men bound into fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. He answered and said, but I see four men unbound and walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He declared, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not any power over the bodies of these men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Then Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own god. Therefore I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their house laid in ruins, for there is no other god who is able to rescue in this way. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. God won. God won the battle. Here there was everything was stacked up against them. It seemed like this problem was so powerful. And God washes it all away. It's all fixed. It's all turned around. And when After this all happens, after that furnace has been heated so hot, and after they survived it all, then Nebuchadnezzar makes this great statement, where he says here, let me put it on the screen, he says here that, he says, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angels and delivered his servants, who trusted in him, set aside the king's command, and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own god. So what I want to do here at the end is I want to look at this statement and see there's three things that Nebuchadnezzar highlights here. Three things that these guys did to withstand this tremendous pressure. And the first one you see here is that these guys trusted God, as Nebuchadnezzar said. How he talks about, how he says here, they trusted in him. And so when I'm dealing with these tremendous pressures, how do I deal with it? He says the first thing is trust in God. I need to put my trust in him. Well, here these guys are. They're way off in Babylon. Here they've been taken away from their homeland. Everything's difficult. They've dealt with challenge after challenge after challenge. Is this really a time to trust in God? Why should they trust in God? He's the one that let them get taken captive. He's the one who's let them go through all these difficulties. He's the one who's been watching as everybody else bowed down to this idol. Why should they trust in God? And yet these men have the kind of faith that they can trust in God even when they've gone through those challenges. Even when they've been through difficulty after difficulty, that didn't shake their faith. They still said, nevertheless, we're still going to trust in God. You know what? Even if he doesn't save us, we're still going to trust in God no matter what. We're going to trust in him. And that's the example they set. But not only do they learn to trust in God, but when you see the way that they trusted in him, God was worthy of their trust. The way that God acted, God was not like those heathen gods that they were bowing down to. This God that Nebuchadnezzar constructed, he was as inanimate as could be. I love the phrase, the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar set up. Here's this God that Nebuchadnezzar set up. Boy, it was tall. I mean, it was multiple stories tall. It looked pretty intimidating. He set it up. He built it himself. And that phrase, set up, one of the reasons I like it is you see it through that chapter. I found it repeated 9 times throughout this chapter. The writer keeps emphasizing the image that Nebuchadnezzar set up. The image that Nebuchadnezzar set up. And you can see the writer's almost chuckling as he says it. Like, this guy, he built it. It's his God, but he built it. He set this whole thing up. And that's in contrast to a God who is not only active, but who is with his people. And when I say with his people, I mean right down there in the flames, walking with his people. We serve a God who, when we go through those challenges and we feel so alone, he walks through the flames with us. That's how much God wants to be with us and help us through those challenges. That's the God we serve. And it's easy in those difficulties to lose sight of that and to start thinking of God being off somewhere as an inanimate thing. But instead, the thing you see in this chapter that's so critical is God wasn't like that. God was right there with his people off in the foreign land in the fire of the most difficult circumstance they'd ever endured in their whole life. God was there. But not only did they trust in God, but we also see they knew how to make a stand. How Nebuchadnezzar points that out when he says, they set aside the king's command. Now here's Nebuchadnezzar the king complimenting them for saying, and they didn't even follow the thing I told them to do. Here, they took a stand and said, that's the line. We're not going past that. We're not going to go over there. No matter what the consequences are, we're not walking across that line. I've got to do that with myself, where I set up these boundaries and I say, this is the limit. I don't go that direction. If I have this concept of sin that, you know, I probably shouldn't go there, it might not be a good idea to do that. It's really hard to defeat sin with a probably. It's really difficult. The only way that I'm going to defeat sin is when I make a hard and fast line in my mind and say, this is wrong, this is right, and I'm not going to go to that wrong. I'm going to stay in the right. That's the only way that I can defeat that sin, is if I make that as a very clear boundary in my mind and in the mind of the people around me, where they see that I have that kind of standard. I need to take a stand. But then finally, they sacrificed everything. And you see that when Nebuchadnezzar says, they yielded up their bodies. They gave themselves up. And they even said, you know, even if God doesn't save us, we trust He is going to save us, but even if He didn't, we're going to jump right into that furnace. That is a real sacrifice. And that can be difficult to say that, you know, even if I lose a friend or lose a relationship or whatever happens here, I'm still going to do the right thing. Even if I don't make as much money, even whatever happens, I'm still going to do the right thing. That's hard. But that's the kind of sacrifice that we need to make, that God calls on us to make. Because we have to take up our cross and follow Christ. Those are the lessons of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And when we do that, when we trust in God, make a stand, sacrifice everything, then God can handle that. Then whatever the challenge is that we're going through, no matter how dark it may seem, no matter how hot the fire may seem, God can handle it. That is a wonderful encouragement. And I hope that helps us throughout all the difficulties in our lives. If you're not yet a Christian, this is a time where you can come and you can submit to the God of all the universe. You can bow yourself before Him and you can choose to follow Him regardless of whatever the cost may be. We hope that you will do that. Please come forward as we stand and as we sing.